Welcome to the Wang Bennett's Podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now, here's your host, Wang Bennett.
Welcome to Wang Bennett's Podcast. My name is Wang Bennett, and it's December the 6th, 2023, a real snowy morning. And our guest today is an artist. She's a business person. She's an instructor and most of all, an animal lover. And Miss Benny Holly, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Now, tell me a little bit about your early life. I know you grew up in Beckley.
I did. I was actually born in Michigan. My parents were from here. Actually, they lived out here in the Stanford. My father grew up in this area, in Lanark, Stanford area. And they moved to Michigan. And as an infant, they decided to move back to Beckley. So we moved back to town. I lived over, actually on East Main Street was where I had my early years. So I was a town kid.
Now, you have brothers and sisters?
I have an older sister. She's 6 years older than I am. And later on, my parents divorced and my dad remarried. So I have a half sister that's about 13 years younger than me.
Now, your older sister, mm-hmm. Donna, she graduated same year I did, I think.
Yeah,
now, I don't think we had any classes together, but I remember she used to come to all those dances and stuff we had at the Y and everything. And she and a very good dancer and had a friend named Trudy Fisher.
Yes.
And they were at all those dances.
Trudy was like my other sister.
And very good dancers. But I don't think I ever had any classes. Back then, Woodrow had 2,000 people in the school. And you very seldom got to see everybody. But what were some of the activities you were involved with as a kid? Anything in particular?
Not really. I was just a basic, typical kid. Didn't have a lot of interest other than I did have some art interest. I enjoyed it when I was a kid and up into junior high. And then other things just kind of changed along the way and I got away from it. But that was pretty much it. I wasn't really into sports at all. So I was definitely more of a creative.
Now, were there any teachers that stand out in your mind that might have influenced you any at all?
Definitely. In junior high in the eighth grade, Mrs. Hughes, art teacher, not sure she's still alive, I don't really know, but she definitely recognized I had something in the arts there a little bit and really encouraged me to stay into art. And that really did play a big influence on me. I kind of carried it in my head for a while, even through high school, thinking that would be something I would like to get into. Just, the road I was on didn't really take me that direction at that time. So,
Now, did you sometimes in class and stuff, would you sit around and doodle any? Or?
Oh, I always doodled. Yeah, I was a doodler. My mother was a doodler. It's really funny. When I pick up things, some of the things I find that she had done. And my grandmother was an artist.
Oh, really?
So I think I kind of picked those things up from them. Didn't realize it at the time.
What kind of music did you listen to back in those days?
Pretty much the 70s music. I was pretty much into the rock music thing. I liked a little bit of the mellow stuff too. But
group?
No, not really. I liked to listen to Elton John. I think that was, that type of stuff.
How did you meet Bobby?
Well, Bobby and I met through friends. We had some of the same friends. I met him when I was about 17. And we became very good friends, and he actually gave me my 18th birthday party. So it was just out of a friendship through meeting through other friends.
Did he have a pickup line or anything?
I'm sure he did. No doubt in my mind. I don't remember right off what it was, but no, we actually developed a really good friendship before we started dating. So we were pretty good friends.
After high school, were you going to college or going to work or where were
Well,
you?
I had a desire to go to art school, but that just, like I said, it wasn't in the picture. And, then I had met Bobby and we got married when I was 19. Uh-huh. And his parents had owned the nature shop. That was the first little pet store in Beckley. And we both had jobs, other jobs. I worked for a little while for the Board of Education. There was a little place out in Daniels that they had, you know, help kids get started in like plumbing and that type of thing. Anyway, I worked there for a little while as secretary, and he had a job doing, I don't even know really what you were doing. And his parents kept encouraging me that I should get into dog grooming because they got phone calls all the time for dog groomers. So at that point, that got my interest. So I found a local groomer. There was nobody around at that time, you know, really teaching. So I found a local groomer. She was one of the only ones, I guess, and spent time with her. And she kind of got me started in that direction.
Uh-huh.
So
you were in there before Bobby got going.
I was. I started doing the grooming and got pretty good at it and got very busy with it. And then at that point, I approached him and told him I thought it might be a good idea if he were to quit his job and start working with me, because I was getting so busy that I was needing help. Uh-huh. So somewhere along that line, I guess it was probably in the early or late 70s, somewhere around 77, that we started working together and building the business.
Now, his mom and dad had to sell the place. The road came along.
They did. At that point, we started out in a really small little shop, and we were growing. So we came out onto the bypass, came through there. At that point, we actually built another little shop beside the nature shop and kind of upgraded a bit. And then when the road came through, of course, it took all of us out. So uh-huh. At that point, we were able to get the property next door and built. His parents went out of business. So at that point, we built Holiday Kennels, and we had the grooming, and then we took over the kenneling at that point.
Now, you really don't have to have certification to be a dog groomer, do you?
It's not required by law, which is a bad thing in my opinion. It would be nice. But what I did, because I'm just the type of person that when I go to do something, I want to do it all the way. Uh-huh. And at that point, they were offering national certification. But like I said, it wasn't required. It was something if you wanted to do. And I did. So I actually spent a couple of years going and doing all the required testing and became a certified master groomer, which I think I was like right in somewhere around in the 700s in the country. So I was up pretty close, you know, as far as doing that. And you're not required to do that, but it definitely puts you through a testing point where you know you are qualified to be doing what you're doing. And unfortunately, that's not something that's pushed today.
But it probably also would protect you some in case of any liability, I guess,
absolutely.
If there's anything like that.
Yeah. So what I did after that, after I got this certification, we kind of discussed it. And because there weren't really any, there were schools out there, but they nothing close. So at that point, we decided, because I had become a master groomer, that we might open up a dog grooming school. So in the late 90s, we did that. And I had to go through the state just like any other college or university. I put together the curriculum. It took me about a year to put everything to get together that was required for the state to permit us to actually open a school. And we did that. And that's when we purchased the property down in Beaver, where Kenzie's Cakes is now. We had that building and we opened up the school there. And we did that for several years. And about that time, the road came through again for about what I think was the second time anyway. Yeah. And
they were following
us. So they took our business again. So at that point, we decided to move. It would be more beneficial to us to move our grooming business into the building in Beaver. And that time we went ahead and closed the school. So it was quite of an adventure moving around and making all these decisions on what to do.
Something that's tied into all that. Mm-hmm. You guys, you were also quite a photographer.
I was. I still do it, not as much as I did. Yeah. So during the grooming time, first of all, I'm a dog fanatic. I was a dog fanatic from the time I was 3 years old. I mean, it was just something that's in me. I work really well with dogs, and I was enjoying photography, and I was doing some wedding photography at the time. So we just kind of, it made sense to kind of bring that into the grooming. And so I did a lot of, actually had a studio set up for quite a while doing the pet photography, well, along with other things, but we kind of made that the primary thing.
Now I know that you actually won some awards, their newspaper award. Back then they used to have King Photo had a thing that they sponsored, and a lot of people don't remember King Photo, but it was downtown. Sold everything camera wise.
We were shooting with film in those days.
but you had won some awards with your portraits of animals, and do you still do that kind of thing?
I do, not as much as I used to.
Now that they have phones and everything.
Well, yeah, and I use my phone a lot still, you know, take a lot of photos. I take a lot of photos as I paint, so I do use them. But I still have all my gear, and actually here recently we've been talking about getting, you know, I'd like to get back into that more as far as working with the pets. I just really, really enjoy animals. I love people too, but I really have a connection with the animals.
Now, another thing you guys did, I don't know how it worked out, but you opened up a mobile dog service.
We were ahead of our time. We really were. That was so new back in the that era of time that we were doing the grooming. And we always tried to stay on top of things. You know, we just like that. We loved the idea of being able to do that. So we actually found a guy in Atlanta, Georgia, that built these vans at the time. We went down there and purchased a van from him and went out on the road with him a little bit, you know, learn how to use it. Brought it back to Beckley, and that worked out really well. And it was, the business was good. Like I said, we were kind of ahead of our time doing it. But during that time, Bobby got seriously ill. He had cancer during that time for a while, which he obviously has recovered from. And our son was very young, and it just got to be too much for me. Uh-huh. So we did sell it. We sold it to a lady, I think, up in Chicago.
But this van was custom made.
It was great. Yeah.
You would go to their house.
We'd pull in the driveway, plug in, and we were ready to go. We had a holding tank of water, and this guy had come up with a way where he would run the water would run over the engine. And that's what heated it. So you go out and drive around for about 15 minutes and you had your water heated for, you know, to go in So it was complete with bathtub, dryers, you know, everything we needed, grooming table.
I could see where that would be popular even now.
I think it's gotten really popular in a lot of places.
Because people,
now.
You know, it's hard for some people, especially older people and stuff, to take their dogs out, but you come right to their house. And I mean, that's great. Well, I know that, you even tried. You delved into the education part. Mm-hmm. A daycare group came in, and you guys were teaching them how to handle ducks and rabbits.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
those were the fun days.
During this type of work, you get bit a lot, don't you? I mean,
you know, well, on occasion, I won't say a lot. You know, you really learn how to handle and read their body language, so. It gets to the point where, you know, if you're cautious, it's not too bad. Because most dogs, when they bite, especially in grooming, it's out of fear, not out of being mean. They're just, you know, fearful. They don't know what's going on. So we had a few incidents along the way.
Do you have to put muzzles on those?
You know, I won't say we've never muzzled one, but I prefer not to. I just, you know, if I can get by without doing that, I would prefer not to. But occasionally you'd have one, you know, that you'd have to get it done.
What is the most difficult part of dog grooming?
For me, I think it was just the weight of the dogs. And, they tend to fight back. The tug and pull, not them being mean or not even the grooming part of it for me. But it really played a toll on me physically. You know, the lifting and my hands over several years of grooming, my hands started really feeling, you know, just, the, you know, constant clippers running, that type of thing causes issues.
Now, you did this for 32 years.
I did, 32 years.
And who had the business head in the family, you or Bobby?
I think both of us had the business head, but he handled the business part of it. He worked the front of our business. He was the one that went out and greeted people and He probably had the hardest part dealing with the public. Yeah. So he did most of that. For years, I don't think anybody even knew I was back there. I think everybody thought he did it all. But he's just such a likable person. Everybody really enjoyed coming in and talking with him. And he made a lot of friends. And we would go out somewhere and speak. And he, I had to say, who is that? And he'd go, well, that's so-and-so. That's Fifi's mom. So I knew the dogs. But yeah, he did a lot of the business part of it.
And well, you had to be good at what you did because you wouldn't have business very long. People wouldn't come back.
I gave it my best. I really, really cared about my work and putting effort into it and making the dogs look good. And
now you did, y'all did some animal boarding too, didn't you?
We did, yeah. Now Bobby took care of most of that. I didn't do much of the boarding part. But yeah, we had a very nice kennel. And it was very good to us for many years. We had a lot of regulars. It takes a lot of work. That's a 24/7 job.
Yeah.
And the only way we ever really got a vacation was maybe in the middle of the winter when the boarding would slow up. You know,
is there still a boarding school down in that?
There are several people now that are doing grooming and boarding. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's several around now. There's over the last couple of years, I think there's been several businesses open up for daycare and boarding.
You also, besides being married to a musician mm-hmm. and a musician's family, did you play a little violin?
Oh, that's right. A little violin.
little violin?
Somewhere along the line, I got kind of crazy. And I'll give you the story Bobby always tells. I was actually out on a trip with the band he was with at the time. And the guys always like to stop at music stores when we were out of town. So we stopped at a music store, I think in North Carolina or somewhere. And everybody shoots off different directions. And, you know, drummers and drums, Bobby's and the keyboards, guitarist takes off. And I'm just left looking around. So we get ready to leave and we go get in the car. And I'm the only one carrying anything out. So I had gotten, I didn't have anything to do. So I went to the string section and got the idea that I was going to play violin. So I bought a violin. And brought it home and found a violin teacher. This kind of led me into my music involvement as far as music goes. And I bought the violin and I found a guy up in Lewisburg who was teaching. He had just moved to the area, I think from Virginia at that time. And I started taking lessons from him. And so I got up to about an intermediate level. I don't play much anymore. I get it out on occasion. It's something you have to stay on top of.
Now, were you playing violin or fiddle? Or?
I was playing violin because that's what I was encouraged to learn first.
Uh-huh.
I like fiddle best. And it's just the difference in how you play it. They're the same instrument.
Now, so they got you into the music business. And mm-hmm. I know one particular time, one of my old buddies, Dickie McVeigh,
mm-hmm.
he'd been involved in all kinds of different venues, and I know one time you guys sponsored some type of seminar or
something he had.
How did you get mixed up with Dickie?
Well, Bobby played music with Dick back, I guess, in the 70s, and so we knew him that way, and they were really good friends. So my involvement, I'll kind of go back around here a little bit. So the guy that I was taking violin from, he and another gentleman that lived in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, they became a duo. And Adam DeGraff, he's the violinist. Adam and I had become very good friends, and he knew, of course, Bobby was a musician. And so we became really good friends. And they had a tour coming up. So they took me on. They asked me if I would go on this tour with them. That was about the time we were ready to sell our business. So we got pretty involved in that type of their manager. So they needed somebody. They had a very large national tour coming up, and they needed someone who knew the business enough that they could depend on to go on this tour with them. They needed somebody to totally manage it. And I was really good in that area, and I'd already been working with them doing some other things. And so I got very involved in that aspect. And that kind of connected into what Dick was doing, too. Dick was into management and all. And because of their relationship, that's how we kind of connected up and kind of backed him on coming here for the seminar and that type thing.
Dickie had, I don't think I've even told Bobby this before, but I was singing in a group that we were playing at Teen Town one night, and Dickie came in. He was from Mullins, I think, originally. And during the break, he came over and he said, I want to talk to you a minute. And he said, I'm going to Nashville and I'm going to do this and this and this and this. And he said, I like the way you sing. Would you be interested in? And I said, of course, yeah, sure, whatever. Of course, I never heard from him again until he got mixed up with my father-in-law, who was in the music business. And by that time, Dickie had then gone to Nashville and done all everything he said he was going to do. He was not only a good artist, he helped people out with their careers.
Absolutely, yeah.
Great guy. Just Dickie's passed away, and hate to lose somebody like him. But now this duo that you got involved with,
yes.
Piano fiddle. And they played everything from Bach to bluegrass.
And that is the truth. And so the pianist, Lynn Wright, had been the, he played.
But now you guys have done sold the business.
Okay. Right? It was right about that time. We were ready to sell the business. Okay. And Adam and I had become friends. He had met up with the pianist. This thing was starting to kick off for them. They needed a manager. So it all just kind of fell into place as far as timing goes. And so we actually were connected with an agency out of Nashville. They were doing the actual tour layout. And then I took it from there and would make all the contacts along the way. And it was a 10-month tour. Bobby and I bought a motorhome at the time so we could kind of live on the road instead of having to depend on hotels and that type of thing. And we all packed up and hit the road.
Did you have how old was your son?
He was already a young adult. He had already graduated, and he had a job. He was working here in town for Facilio and Grogan, so we felt like it was safe to go off and leave him at that point. He was mature now, and I'll get into this in a second. It was kind of a regret, I guess, we didn't take him with us, but we actually did, I think we looked at it yesterday, I think it was 33 states and how many cities? Yeah, 122 cities is what they did. It was over 200 concerts. Wow. So we were all over the country. So even the cities.
Did they play in churches and stuff?
They did play in some churches. They played in civic centers, auditoriums.
Wow. Old theaters.
Lots of old theaters. Yeah, it was great. It was just such an experience. It's probably one of the best experiences of our life. I mean, we just got to see so many places, and it was really neat. And these guys were just so talented and had such a rapport with the audience, and they were funny. And it was just really a good time for all of us. The pianist had an adult son that traveled with him. He had a motorhome. He traveled. And then Adam, the violinist, his wife and two children went along. Wow. And so we just had a team out on the road for almost a year. So it was a great experience. And I learned so much. You know, it was just very enlightening. I worked with, major venues and professionals. It was just a really great time.
Now, he played a grand piano.
Yes.
Did you haul that around?
No.
We
had it in the contract that there needed to be one sitting there for him when we got there.
Okay.
So, yeah, that was an impossibility.
You went 33 states,
122 cities.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
sometimes
were you tired?
Oh, yeah. It was, you know, a lot of people think being out on the road on a tour like that's just nothing but fun. And it was. It was a great time. But it was teamwork for all of us. The musicians had to rest because, like Bob said, they were sometimes doing two concerts a day. And, so they had to get their rest. We had to eat properly. The timing, part of my job was making sure, because we would zigzag all over the place. So part of my job was making sure that we got where we were supposed to be, when we were supposed to be there. And then I made sure that they got there when they were supposed to be there. So yeah, Bobby would drive and I would sit in the back and work. And, you know, lots of phone calls, a lot of paperwork, because we, you know, everything was under contract. And then we were working through this, you know, this place in Tennessee. And so there's a lot to be done.
You did have some time to visit a few
we
sights
did.
That do a little sightseeing.
Anytime we had a day off, it became a game for us, really. If we had time off and we were within 3 hours of something we wanted to see, we'd take off and go see it and then get back on the road. So
I read that you guys traveled 51,000 miles.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, we sure did.
Time to trade in the RV when you get back.
That's what we did.
Now, what happened at the end of the tour? Did they break up?
Actually, we did two tours. After that one, they actually ended up doing another one. And then the pianist, Lynn, he had some health problems, and he decided he was going to retire. So we actually found another pianist to play with Adam, and he kind of came in and just fell right into place. They did a second tour. It wasn't as large, but it was pretty busy. But as we got home that summer from the big tour and the new pianist had come on, they were offered to come to, we got an invitation to come to South Korea. So we were able to go to South Korea for them to perform. We spent about 3 weeks there. Bobby and I and Adam's family went over about a week early, so we could, you know, experience the culture and really get to see South Korea and enjoy that.
So you guys made the most of it.
It was really great. I mean, we just, you know, went to places we never really had ever thought about going to. And, you know, it was just very exciting, a lot of fun.
Well, somewhere along the line, you decided to delve into this art a little more. Well, you're self-taught. Yeah. You're not, hadn't received a lot of training other than school, I guess, some of the stuff you've done.
No, we came back off of that tour. I think then I jumped in and worked with TaylorMade for about, 3 or 4 years. I guess I did the same thing with them for a while.
Oh, good.
That was a lot of fun. And then that ended after they kind of ended their thing. And I just kind of sat, not really knowing what I wanted to do next. And it was a snowy morning about like today. And Bobby and I decided we would get some paint out and paint. He'd gone to a paint party and over at 110 Marshall. And we didn't want to go to the same one because we didn't want the same painting. So he went to one and then I went to another one. And we were sitting there one morning kind of bored. And I had a box of oil paints that my grandmother had. I told you, she was an artist. And after she passed, I was given all of her art supplies. And we just kind of fooled around with it a little bit. And I thought, well, I'll paint a picture of my dog. So I painted the picture of the dog and put it up on my Facebook page. And this is where Dick McVeigh comes back into the picture. So Dick, I don't know if he called or wrote or what. And he goes, "That's fantastic. I want you to do my portrait." And it was really funny because it really wasn't that great of a painting. But Dick was a huge encouragement to me. He really pushed me to stay into it. So I credit him with a lot of that, pushing me that direction. He really thought I had something. So that, you know, it was encouraging to have somebody feel that way. So I just kind of started pushing into it a little bit and getting more involved. And I guess whatever the creative part of me that was sitting back there from years ago came out, I really had no idea that I could, you know, ever produce the type of paintings that I'm doing right now. Wow. So it was kind of a surprise to me. It was just one of those things that happened.
So people will send you a picture of their dog. Mm-hmm. You mainly prefer headshots, don't you? Or
yeah, I'll do. I'm at this point, I'm doing about anything, you know, anybody wants. But I started out doing the pet portraits. I just felt good with it, you know, where I really knew dogs and the structure, and you know, I'd had my hands on dogs for years, so it just pretty much came natural to me. So yeah, that's where I started. And then from the portraits, and I started, you know, dabbling in different areas of art. So I'm doing a little bit of everything right now.
So that, say somebody from out of state will send you a picture, mm-hmm. you'll paint and then you'll mail it mm-hmm. back to them.
Yep, I'll just package it up and ship it out to them.
Now, do you frame it or do they frame it?
I'm not doing any framing. Yeah. It might be something I would get into, you know, somewhere later on, but no, I'm not doing that part.
Now, you still have paint parties?
You know, the only paint party that I do, I started doing one, Paint Your Pet. And because I do feel good with the pet painting, I do those occasionally. So I've done a few others here and there, but that's pretty much all I'm doing as far as a party goes.
So now if they send you a picture of their animal, mm-hmm. and you'll sketch it.
Right.
Or you have sketched it, and then they come and paint it.
And then I
you
got
them
through
them.
The painting, right.
That's
it's a lot of fun, and everybody really enjoys it, and I make sure everybody's happy when they go home, and I think I've encouraged other people, you know, to start getting into painting by doing that. I'm sure a lot of the paint parties have.
Is this a lucrative, is it a profession or just a hobby in between?
Yeah, it's basically a hobby. I mean, there are people that make an actual, you know, income profession out of it. It's difficult in art. You have to just, you know, really hit on something, I think, that that works. And I'm not, you know, I've not got into it for that purpose at all.
Sure.
So, you know, anything I'm doing right now is just the cherry on top. You know, I just enjoy painting. I like to paint for myself. I like to experiment and see. I'm not even sure right now what all I can do. I didn't start until I was 60. So I've got a lot of catching up to do.
Have you ever had a critique, I mean, from someone else who has been in the profession?
Yeah, actually, our son lives in Washington State, very big in the arts there. You have a lot of professional artists, and I've gone out there, I guess, I've made 3 trips there to take classes from professional teachers, people that are making a living off of it, that are professional, and it's intimidating, but it's really, it's been really good, you know, to go in and let someone like that critique your work and help you learn. So that's, and I hope to do more of those.
Yeah. Now, I know that you've been working for a few years on sketching, and I've seen some of the, on Facebook, some of your sketches, and some, I have a real interest in the buildings, and, you know, you've done the church, St. Francis Church, and Jimmy's Place, and the Thurman Railroad area, I don't know what all you've done, but I really like that, but you do kind of you sketch it, but you do kind of a watercolor type stain type thing or something.
So I have a love for the buildings too. I really love the architecture. I love the old buildings. I really love just some of the buildings in Beckley, you know, that I wanted to capture them before we lost any more of them.
Yeah.
You know, I wish I'd started sooner, but I think about 2018, I went and I took a class on quick sketching, and I did it for the purpose of helping me loosen up in my painting, kind of an exercise. So I started doing it and doing it often. And because I do love the buildings, that's kind of what my direction was. So I started sketching some of the buildings, and quick sketching and sketching are a little bit 2 different things. So it's, you're still sketching the building, but in quick sketching, your goal is to do it in less than 30 minutes. Mm. So the quick sketches are, I guess I would just called a little bit looser, a little, you know, sloppy, not so neat. And sketching, you know, if you want to put time in it, you can actually do a really nice picture. So I enjoyed the quick sketching because it was so loose and fast. And I thought, well, that will help me in my painting. And before I knew it, I had all these sketchbooks just full of the quick sketches. And part of that quickness is to do it, you know, you sketch it out quick, and then you take watercolor and just kind of, it's called a wash, where you just grab a little bit of color and throw it in there, not trying to be neat or stay in the lines or anything like that. Just give it some color. And I was just really attracted to that style of art. So I've kept it up. I like I said, I started in 18, and I've just continued to do it.
Now, you've got a book. It's called Where I Live. Mm-hmm. And it's a collection of quick sketches. Tell us a little bit about your book.
Okay. Well, I had all these sketches, and the book came about because Bobby wouldn't leave me alone. He kept going, he said, you really need to put these sketches in a book. You know, I'm like, well, you know, those are just, like I said, those are just sketchbooks that I have from, you know, practice. And I didn't really think much about it as far as being art that anybody would want to actually buy. So I guess this past year, I thought, well, we'll do some prints. At his encouragement. So I had some prints made, and I went to a couple of small craft type things that was offered in Beckley. And to my surprise, people really had an interest in that type of art. And so I was selling quite a few sketches. So he had really encouraged me to take the collection, at least And actually, that's not all. I think I've got a little over 100 sketches in the book, but I've got many more at home, and there'll be many more to come because I'm not stopping.
There's always room for volume two. Yeah, there you go. Three, yeah.
And so he encouraged me to put them together, and I thought, well, we'll just give it a shot and see what happens. And again, to my surprise, it's been very well received.
How can somebody get one of these books? I mean,
Well, currently, I have them at Beckley Arts Center. They've got a the Christmas holiday show over there, so I have them there. And on the 16th, I'm going to be there and do some book signings. And then they're available on my website, which is BennyHollyArt.com, and you can get them there. And I hope to get them scattered out a little more, but we just actually got them in probably a couple of weeks ago. And I've already done a reorder, so it's been really good.
That's great. Uh-huh. Now, you do things like greeting cards, too, don't you?
Yeah, I take my prints and make cards out of them. And I've done a little bit of everything with my paintings and my prints. I do, I've made jewelry, different items that you can get your prints made on.
Now, you are a juried artist from Tamarack.
I am.
What does it take to be a juried artist from Tamarack?
You submit your art to, they have an application, and you submit to present your art to them. And I think I had to submit like 6 or 8 paintings via internet. You know, you just send them the pictures. And if they feel like they want to see your work, then they contact you. And then they have certain jury dates. And at that time, you actually bring your physical work in that you sent in. And they take it, and they have several professional artists will come in and look at it and determine if they want it, you know, if it's what they are looking for to put in their gallery. And I did that in 2000. I think that was in 2018.
Now, once you're in, do they still have to check you out all the time? Mm-hmm. Or
yeah. So anytime they have an art exhibit, you still have to submit your art.
I see.
And then, and they have a lot of themed exhibits, and I really like that because it kind of gives me a goal then of for whatever that theme might be. So sometimes I'll have something on hand that fits the theme, and sometimes I'll paint something, you know, specifically for that show. But then you submit it the same way, and then they decide if they, you know, take it for that particular show.
Now, besides the art that you're working on and a possible 2 or 3 more volumes of your book, anything else you got coming up you're thinking about getting into? Like you don't have nothing else?
My mind is always going, I'll tell you. Sometimes I have too many directions, and I'll go I don't know if I can pull all this off. But yeah, I've got a few things up my sleeve I think I would like to pull out later on. But yeah, I'm always thinking about things for the future, what direction I'd like to take it. And it's just so wide. There's so much out there. And like I said, where I started later in life, you know, I haven't really decided, you know, where I'm going to land. If I do, I may not ever land anywhere.
Tell us about your son a little bit. What's he doing now?
What's
his name?
His name's Landon, and he lives out in Cedro Woolley, Washington. It's an adorable town. It's near Bellingham, and he's a tech guy. He works for a company called Red Hat. An international company. Now, you can't ask me what he does because I don't really understand, but he's got a very good job. He's been with the company for quite a long time, and his wife is a pharmacist. She works at the hospital in Bellingham, and that's home to them. They'll never come back, so they're trying to get mom and dad out there, so we're looking at the future of possibly, you know, landing in Washington at some point. And we have 3 grand dogs, no grandchildren, none planned. They're very much career minded, so that's not in the picture.
Well, Washington's only all the way across the country. Yeah. That's not too, no. You'd have to look like the Beverly Hillbillies going across.
That's about the truth. But yeah, we spend quite a bit of time out there. We spent 5 months out there summer before last. We've got a motorhome. We parked it out there and spent the summer to see how we like living there. And yeah. It was nice. So we really like it. But they just love it there. That's their home.
What's besides the work and the creativity, is there anything that on your bucket list that you would like to do? Something that before you can't do it?
No, you know, I really think right now, you know, I'm so passionate about the arts. I would love to I love to travel more so than Bobby. I have to get him on board. I would love to spend some time actually on the road with my painting and, you know, like paint myself across the country, you know. I think it would be exciting just to, you know, take my time and be able to stop along the way. And because I really like the idea, it's called plein air painting when you just, you know, set up and you paint outside and paint what you see. I do paint from photos. I have to a lot of the time because I don't have time to stop and paint. You know, I'll take photos of things I really love and then I'll bring them home. But I think my real desire would be to spend time in the plein air painting and on the road while I can still see. And I'm the driver and the motorhome. So, so while I can still do that, I would love to do that.
Well, you guys have lived a pretty exciting life already, actually.
I feel extremely blessed. You know, I just feel like we've already had a lifetime and have been very blessed with it. If we never did another thing, you know, it's been fantastic. I feel very, very fortunate to have done the things we've done and see the places we've seen.
Well, Benny, I sure appreciate you stopping by and talking to us.
And
you guys are welcome to come back anytime you want to.
I appreciate it. And it's been fun.
You get a couple more volumes out. You know, the city of Beckley, I'm sure, would want to know about it. And again, tell us how to get that book, Where I Live.
You can go to my website. It's BennyHollyArt.com. And currently, like I said, it's at Beckley Art Center on Johnstown Road. They're selling them for me. And that's probably the simplest way right now. But the website set, it's really easy on the website. You can just go there and a couple of clicks and you're through. And then I send it. Yeah. Then I'm doing the book signing on the 16th at Beckley Arts Center. That'll be the last day of their Christmas fair.
Okay.
So I'll be doing those. But
okay. This podcast will come out on the 8th. So you'll have... Hopefully people will listen and take heed there. Well, thank you again. And Bobby, thank you for coming by and offering emotional support.
Well, I try.
And always glad to see you guys. And anybody else out there that would like to be on our podcast, you can contact me at awbennett50@gmail.com. And until next time, remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. This is Wayne Bennett, and God bless you.